talking about your reporting, you're doing a great job. And on Friday, you definitely caught our eye with the talk of the NBA and its players coming to or getting close to an agreement on what it would look like if the season was in fact canceled. Should that be, like, does that mean that the pendulum is swinging closer to that? Are we close to having a resolution? What does that mean exactly?
You know, it's hard to explain this because it's high finance and it involves escrow accounts and stuff like that. The owners and the players are talking right now. The owners actually don't have to talk. They have the ability within the contract to just say, hey, listen, we've got a pandemic. We can't pay you any more salaries. Your contracts are canceled. They have that ability. They don't want to do that because they want to be able to have a relationship going forward. So they're negotiating right now. But what they're negotiating is, let's start taking some of your salaries, putting them aside, holding them in account. We're not going to put them in our pocket. We're going to hold them in an account. And in the event that the season can't continue, then we're going to take that money. You take some of the loss, we take some of the loss, and we move on to next season. And it doesn't mean that they're going to cancel it, but it's an indication that they're preparing for it. They're still hoping that they can work, but they've got to prepare for it now because the money that's coming out of their pocket, they've got to try to control it. And it's complicated, but that move to do that is a responsible move by the owners, but it's an indication of pessimism. And so, you know, it's difficult in this era that we're in right now because we just cannot have predictive analysis on the future. You know, it's very hard to project anything. Certain things that we feel strongly about can change dramatically in 10 days or 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, I could be back on here and there could be some development in this fight that completely has it going a different track. But the owners are negotiating and trying to make a deal with the players that creates a shelter in the event that the season can't continue. That right there, in fact, that they're not talking about restart, like the negotiations they're having right now are not about, hey, how are we going to get back to restarting? Not because they don't want to restart, but because there's no way to even have those discussions in the lay of the land. So it's disappointing. It's not the end, but it's certainly disappointing.
Yeah, and I think that the way to interpret it, if you are trying to be an optimist, I guess like me, is what you said there, which is that it's really, really difficult to predict where this is going or how you're ever going to be able to establish your league. I'm sure that guys are throwing ideas around, but ultimately what you can prepare for right now is the advent of a canceled season and how that ends up working. Where do you see there being the most pushback on that idea, though, and is there a potentially ugly sticking point?
The problem is the players have no leverage because they have this clause in their contract that they have the right to cancel the entire collective bargaining agreement, you know, and basically start a lockout. The owners don't want to do that, obviously. They have great relationships with the players right now. They have a CBA that runs through 2024. They don't want to do that. But they have that hammer to go to if they want to. And so, you know, it's interesting. When you look at different places in the world, if you look at the Premier League over in England right now, which is, you know, pretty much the wealthiest league along with the NFL in the world, they don't have an agreement with their players right now on salary reductions. And they're looking at a 700 million pound loss, and they're looking for the players to sort of help with that, and the players are rejecting it. I think if you and I were to vote with our employers, we would vote to not have to get back any of our money right now. But our in a lot of cases, the employers ultimately have the control, and this is the case in the NBA. So I think really ultimately at the bottom line is this. When you look at China, I've been talking a lot about China in the last couple of weeks, it's not a perfect comparison. It's not apples to apples the way it is to the NBA, and primarily because there's no players association over there. They can just, you know, dictate terms. But it's the only thing we have in terms of looking into the future. If you look where China is, they were really on the verge of restarting their basketball season in two different cities, 10 teams in each city playing a round robin so they could create this bubble. But they had an issue with asymptomatic carriers where you would take your temperature. You didn't have a temperature, but you would walk into some place and you could potentially infect somebody. That problem has been the centerpiece of why they have called a rehalt to the progression in their league. And that is why we can talk about bubbles. We can talk about finances. We can go on and on and on. it really, from my view, comes down to testing, 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 testing. We've got to get to a position where we can test quickly and also without taking resources away from people that really need tests. And so to me, the future, short-term future of the sports leagues is how good is the testing? And we're just so much in scramble mode to fight the virus on the front line right now. It's hard to know where that would be in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, talking to Brian Windhorst. So if they are able to figure out the testing thing and the other things fall into place from, I guess, an organizational standpoint as far as this potential quarantine league in a month or 2 months or whatever, and they're following the lead of China, do you expect the money thing to be not an issue at all? Like, is that part of the reason they're not even discussing that now? Because it if we get to that point where we're starting up in this quarantine league, that the relationship between the players and the league is good enough that they'll be able to figure out the money at that point.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to avoid is, you remember 2016, we infamously had the cap spike where the salaries shot way up. And as a result, the league kind of lost rhythm for a bit. You had like Kevin Durant being able to go join the Warriors and stuff. Mm-hmm. What they don't want is for there to be this basically a depression. And like next year, for example, the salary cap shoots way down. Like, you know, in 2016, it shot way up. Let's say, oh my gosh, let's say that the loss of money this year means that it shoots $20 million down. And now teams that thought they were going to be at the tax line or maybe pay a little luxury tax, all of a sudden their payroll is really too high and they've got to start trading off players and everything like that. They want to try to smooth that. And because then, by the way, let's say everything returned to normal. Let's say we get testing, we get a vaccine, and we get in 2021, 22, and everything is normal. Then it would jerk way back up again, and you'd have this peak and valley thing with the league, where all these teams would be swinging back and forth, and it would be out of control a little bit. They're trying to avoid that, and so that's why I go back to what I said a few minutes ago. Having these negotiations with the players right now is a responsible thing to do by the owners. It's them saying, let's get together, figure this out, and share the losses in a way that will not damage us in 2 years from now. We're 2 years from now, we're still battling the fallout of the financial ramifications of the coronavirus. That's what they're talking about right now. And, you know, getting into the ins and outs like that, you'd need like, an MBA and a law degree to figure it all out. But from a fan standpoint, the important thing is they're negotiating how to deal with huge losses. They're not negotiating on how we're going to be able to recover and get these games back. I hope in 6 or 8 weeks we are talking about that. But the reality is that they're talking about how to manage the losses from a canceled season.
So Donald Trump has the conference call yesterday at noon with all of the commissioners for the major sports leagues. What's your understanding of the pressure that is going to come from government and its impact on the NBA? Or will the NBA just basically not adhere to any type of public pressure from up top?
Well, I mean, I wasn't on the call, obviously, but no, I have seen, unless I missed something, I have seen nothing that there was testing discussed on the call. Maybe there was, and they all agreed to secrecy, and that hasn't become public. I'm hoping for that, because we can have goodwill and everything like that as long as we want. We can have the support of the government to try to restart sports. That's all well and good. But until you have testing, until you can assure those 10 players who are on the court that they will not that they are safe, that the people who are out there with them are not positive, I don't see how you can go forward. It's to me, it's all about the testing, and I hope, to be honest with you, I hope that the testing is good enough. I hope that they can prove that we can play with players who are negative, and you don't have to wait all the way for a vaccine. But to me, it's all about the testing. And I'm not a scientist. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm just watching what's going on in the rest of the world. And so to me, that's what the key is. I don't think we're going to see fans anytime soon. I'm hopeful that we will. But I will say this about the NBA. There's a bit of a fighting chance more for the NBA than I think for football, because you need fewer people. And you can also hold an NBA game on television anywhere. You can hold it in a soundstage. You can hold it in an aircraft hangar in Billings, Montana. The number of people that you need to play basketball, to support a basketball team, is vastly smaller than a baseball team or an NFL team. And you can also set up a court anywhere. And you can play, you know, multiple games a day on a series of courts in the same location. Baseball, you can maybe kind of get close to that if you're in Arizona or Florida where there's diamonds near each other, but you can't all do it in the same location. And certainly you can't do it in football where you have to have sort of bigger open spaces. So I'm hoping that as somebody who's involved with the NBA, that paves the way. I think tennis and golf have even a better opportunity going forward, because you don't, you know, you're physically distanced from the people that you're competing against. But that's my viewpoint on it. I'm not saying that I'm right. I could totally change my mind in 2 or 3 weeks.
So the indication we'd gotten from the NBA and its players and its officials is that they were going to do everything they possibly could to try and wrap up this season, whether that's waiting into the fall and starting the next season, like at Christmas or whatever. Is that still your understanding, that they still want to do that? Or is this the negotiating of what it might look like if they cancel the season change the timeline on that maybe they are closer to making a more definitive statement?
I don't think they're close to anything. I do think that in talking to people in the league, they are really trying to be creative. And when they say all options are on the table, they do mean it. And I mean, this is happening in sports leagues around the world. Again, I'm going to mention the Premier League in England. Now, I'm not saying they would actually do this. I'm just saying that one of the ideas that's been reported over there is that they would move their entire league and play the games in China, where they've gone through the virus a little bit more and there's more immunity and stuff like that. That's actually been brought up, that they would relocate the whole league to China. I don't think that's going to happen. But my point is, they're looking at very creative options too. I think the NBA will be very, very creative in trying to figure this out. There's no doubt in my mind that they will search every corner and try everything. And I think that's a reason to have some optimism. I do think that you hit on something, which is there a point for the owners and players where you consider whether it makes more sense to damage two seasons or just to lose the playoffs in back section of one? Do you want to go to a place where you have a compromise next season? And that is a line of demarcation that is going to eventually present itself. I don't know when it's going to be. I don't know if that decision has to be made by June 15th, May 1st. I mean, I don't know. I would just be guessing. I will say that I do think the NBA has runway. I do think that they could play their games up until Labor Day and still have an opportunity to start the season somewhat close to on schedule. It would be difficult for the teams that made it all the way to the end. That's why I don't think there's any sort of major decision happening anytime soon. I think they do have time to wait and hope that we make a lot of progress, that maybe there's advances in testing that can make this feasible and make this possible. It's just that the negotiations that they're having right now are to prepare for the worst, but they're still going to hope for the best.
So you're the LeBron whisperer as far as any media member goes. And I wonder what you have interpreted in terms of the way he has spoken about his lack of desire to play in front of fans, his lack of desire to have the season to play out the way that some people have basically outlined it. It seems as though he has distanced himself from any possibilities of this return, or he's at least not seemingly been one that looks like he's just ready for any type of solution. What have you made of LeBron's comments or the way that he's approached this personally?
I think it's indicative of maybe the way a lot of people in America have. I don't think that he was fully understanding the breadth of what's happening. And I don't blame him for that. It's not his job was not to do that. His job was to prepare to play basketball every single night, and he was doing a great job of it. I don't think he quite understood just exactly what was being faced. And look, if his personal feeling is he doesn't want to play basketball unless it's in front of fans, and that's his personal feeling, of course, you know, that's the way you want to do it, then that's fine. But if that's the way you want to feel, you're going to be giving up some time in your career here, because that's just not going to be happening. It's not a real to look at the lay of the land right now and say that you don't want to play, that you only want to play in front of fans, and that you would not want to be sequestered potentially in a bubble. That's not a realistic way that the league is going to come back in the short term. Now, again, we have advances and stuff, and all of a sudden we get the next fall, next winter, if we have something that can return us to normal, and he wanted to wait until that long, then, you know, maybe so. But if he wants to try to win a title this season, playing in front of fans and not playing in a sequestered environment is very unlikely.
Yeah, it is. Before we let you go, Brian, Raptors GM Bobby Webster making headlines. Your colleague Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that he would be in line to interview for what will eventually be the vacant Chicago Bulls job. Can you give us an indication of where he ranks on the pecking order as far as likelihood of getting that job, and whether it's just a matter of time before he eventually moves on somewhere else where he's got a little bit more responsibility?
Yeah, Bobby is very highly respected in the league, as the whole Raptors organization is. It's been known within the league since January that there was going to be an executive hire by the Bulls. It was just unclear until recently that that person was going to be the number one voice in the organization. And obviously, if you're number two in an organization, you have an opportunity to go be number one, especially in an organization like the Bulls that has shown great support for their general manager. I think they've had two GMs since the 80s. I think it was Jerry Krause, and then John Paxson took over for him 17 or 18 years ago. That's the kind of support you're looking for from an ownership group. It's a, even though the Bulls are not in a great spot right now, that is a great job. And so I'm sure that there are a lot of people interested in it. What I would say to the Raptors is, you guys have probably talked about this a lot, but their head coach, their president, and their GM are regarded as one of the tops, if not the best, in the league. And none of them, I believe, are under a long-term contract. And obviously Masai hasn't been interested in signing an extension, or at least kind of given that impression. If I was Larry Tannenbaum, I would be using this time down to try to lock up my talent and try to make them want to enter into a long-term extension with you, because you can sort of make it easier on them to do that. I have no idea how you would do that. I have no idea what the challenges are, but that would be a priority, because you may lose Bobby Webster anyway if it's not to the Bulls, and maybe somebody else because he is number two. But I would try to do everything I possibly could to not make him want to go on the interview. We saw this last year with the L.A. Clippers. Michael Winger, who is, along with Bobby Webster, regarded as one of the best number twos in the league. The Minnesota Timberwolves wanted to hire him, and the Clippers made him an offer that made him not even want to go to Minnesota to do the interview. If I were the Raptors, I don't know if it'll work, because like I said, it's a really attractive job. I would try to do the same thing with Bobby Webster.
Well, is there anything to read between the lines when it comes to Masai not being interviewed for this job, or that they're not, apparently, at least on the surface, appear to be even trying to attract him for an interview?
Well, yeah, because the Bulls are not interested in first off, the cost of signing Masai would be enormous. I think to pull Masai out of Toronto, you would need a contract that was in excess of $10 million a year. Who knows, maybe even 12 or 15. I don't even know what the market would be. Secondly, Masai is still under contract, because it would not be a promotion, because it would be basically a lateral move. You would potentially have to compensate the Raptors for that type of move, whereas Bobby Webster would be moving from number two to number one. That's generally granted in the NBA. So, I don't think it's realistic. I don't think the Bulls are playing in the environment where they're looking to spend that kind of cash or capital, draft capital, on an executive.